longest months of the year, but it's the fastest month of the year. We all know that, indeed, right? Yeah.
Oh my goodness, yes. But there is still no, thing that we still cannot unturn. You know, stones still need to be uncovered, and so many important topics to talk about. That's the purpose of this show for our regular. Weekly listeners, you know that we try to get into subject matter that is relative to our community, not only our campus community, but our community at large, and also things that will really, you know, help somebody, help yourself, help others, help our community, and also our students as well. So today's first interview is no exception to that. We have come off the cusp of National Adoption Month here in the United States, and while we weren't able to get this interview in time during the month of November, we certainly feel that it is absolutely warranting of some time. So we're sort of transitioning from November into this December 1st as we talk about adoptions in the state of Michigan. And we're going to be talking through the organization called the Judson Center, which is really an umbrella organization for so many social and mental health aspects for young people in our community at large. But we're going to be talking specifically about an organization called MARE, the Michigan Adoption Resource Exchange, and I'm looking forward to this.
As am I as well. Our guest today for this segment of the program is Michelle Parra from the Judson Center, which is a part of the Michigan Adoption Resource Exchange. Why don't we bring our guest in here, and Michelle, if you don't mind, explain all of these names, all these connections. I know there's Michigan Department of Health and Human Services involved as well. So why don't you just let us know what the Judson Center is and its connection, and then we'll get into the topic of adoption and all the other issues that are involved with it.
Okay, thanks. Well, thank you for having me, first of all. So I am part of the Michigan Adoption Resource Exchange, and we are a program of the Judson Center. So the Judson Center is a nonprofit organization in Southeast Michigan. The Michigan Adoption Resource Exchange, which we go by MARE, is a statewide program that Judson Center runs. And that program is funded by the Judson Center and the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services. So it's one of the only programs that serves the entire state of Michigan under one contract.
And so it provides, from what I have read and seen, provides information and referral services for families, or is this for people who are looking to be placed? What is the role of the Judson Center?
So the role of the MARE program, it's kind of threefold. So we are an information and referral source for families who are interested in adopting a child through the foster care system. So we have an 800 number and a website where families can call us and speak with an adoption navigator, which is an adoptive parent that works for our program that helps families just learn more about what is this, foster care adoption and how do you get started. We help families find an adoption agency. So Judson Center is an adoption agency, but the MARE program is separate. So we refer families to agencies that are in the area where the family may live. So a family in the Upper Peninsula can call us, and we will give them information about adoption agencies in their counties where they could go to and get started with the adoption process. So that's one part of our program. And just to give a little bit more, families who are interested in starting the adoption process will want to contact us. We'll help them find an agency to go through. And then through that adoption agency, they attend an adoption orientation and can get started with the adoption home study process. And that's all through the adoption agency. The other side of our program is that we help adoption workers across the state of Michigan who have youth who on their caseload, the youth who are in foster care and are available for adoption. And we help them find families for these youth. So right now there are 248 children that we are recruiting for. So that means that in Michigan, there are 248 kids that have a goal of adoption that do not yet have an identified family. So we're searching for the right family for those kids. There are over 2,000 kids in Michigan who have a goal of adoption, but most of those kids are being adopted by a foster parent that they're currently with, or a relative, or a teacher, someone that they already know. But for many reasons. There are 248 kids that don't have a family that they're matched with. So a big part of our program is, you know, recruiting for those specific kids. And I can go into detail, too, about how we do that.
Yeah. I'd like to ask, 248 is a big number. 2,000 yeah. is a big number, an even bigger number. This is the season of the holiday. This is the season of coming together with family. We just came off of Thanksgiving and all of those kinds of things. And so if we can imagine for just a minute, not having supportive family as a young person, as a minor, whether an infant or a toddler or a teen, preteen or a teen, these numbers are pretty big. Have we seen changes, trends? COVID is still here, but it's sort of come in like, you know, this lion that it is and hopefully winding its way out. But what's been the impact the past couple few years? And second part of that question, how different is Michigan from other states around here? Would you say, you know, we don't need specific statistical data, but just based on what your experience is.
So with the involvement that I have, we have seen in the past few years that our numbers have gone down. And so that means that just fewer kids need the recruitment, even though 248 is still, to me, an outrageous number of kids that want a family and they still need to be matched with a family. And I'm not sure, you know, how much that has to do with COVID. I know that Michigan is doing a lot of work in family preservation. So trying to go in at the very beginning of cases to help families stay together. And that's the goal of child welfare in Michigan, is to keep kids safe with their, most of the time with their biological families. And then only when that can't happen are the kids removed. And then if they can't be returned to their families and still be safe, then a lot of times the rights are terminated and their goal becomes adoption. So it's hard, I mean, at this point to say like why the numbers have gone down and if it's, you know, on a larger scale, I wouldn't know the answer to that. But I do know that the number of kids that we're recruiting for has gone down a little bit since COVID.
And then how about any comparison of this particular state, this particular, you know, economy and the family dynamic here in Michigan versus potentially some others nationally speaking?
Yeah, from what I see, and we're a part of national adoption exchanges and organizations. And I think everyone is just kind of feeling it the same way. And we have the same goals, of course, you know, throughout the states, and we share resources with other states. But I know a lot of families will come to Michigan because we're really clear on our website, the youth that are available for adoption, and families from different states can inquire about our youth too. So Michigan, along with all the other states, are part of an interstate compact for adoption. And so where families can adopt children from different states out of foster care.
So just sort of like working at this or looking at this sort of like from one side to the other, right? Okay. So we look at sort of the intake side of it, children who need a parent or need a household. Let's put it that way, whether it's either, voluntarily surrendered or through the court system removed from the situation that they're in. Mm-hmm. So the process goes from there to, I'm assuming, foster care. Is that how that works?
Yeah. So when a youth is in foster care, the court will there'll be a treatment plan for the biological parents, and only so. And it's on an average about 12 months that treatment plan. Like, you know, there'll be social workers that will help the parents maneuver through that treatment plan. And if it's not completed within a certain time frame, whatever the court orders, and the court can terminate the parent's rights. And then in that case, there has to be a goal. So before termination, the goal is always reunification. And that's what we put a lot of energy into. And then when that doesn't happen, then the goal turns to adoption or guardianship. But in these cases that we're talking about, it is adoption. And then once that goal turns into adoption, then adoption workers, we do all the data tracking for the kids whose goal is adoption in Michigan. So we have 248 on our website, but we do the data tracking of all for all the other kids that are already matched with the family to make sure that those adoptions are being done in a timely fashion. So part of what we do with, we photo list youth on our website. So if anyone wants to see the youth, you can see their photo, and we have short narratives. We do videos. We have an in-house videographer and photographer that travels throughout the state to do videos of youth. Most of the youth want, are okay with having videos. If they don't want a video, then we don't do the video. So we get the youth's consent to doing any extra recruitment for them. But we do this because we know, I mean, these are, so many of these are just amazing kids. And we want to let people see their personalities through these videos, because you can't, you know, we can't all, everyone can't meet the kids, but if we have a, you know, a picture, a little narrative, and a video, then it gives people a little bit idea of what these kids are like, and they may want to pursue the adoption process, whether it's for a specific child or for you know, any child in a certain age range. And families can decide and choose what age that they want to adopt, what gender, if there's a disabilities that they feel like they are equipped to care for a child with a certain disability, or maybe that they aren't, you know, equipped to care for. So we help families navigate all those questions. And there are a lot of kind of misperceptions of adoption through foster care that we try to clarify those as well through our marketing.
And I guess that's kind of where I wanted to go next. Sort of that in between phase is the foster care. What is that like for the children, and how that fits into the system of ultimately getting children into, you know, forever homes and housed with a family?
Yeah. So there are residential facilities in Michigan that youth can be placed in. And then there are foster homes that are temporary placements, you know, because the foster parents are working it with the system to reunify. But then there's also foster, you can be a foster parent and then adopt a child once the goal does turn to adoption. So most of the kids are adopted by a foster parent or a relative. But we are recruiting people to become foster parents or just adopted parents so they can help these kids, the 248 kids that we're recruiting for right now, in homes that we, you know, you can be single to adopt. In the past, you know, people thought, oh, you have to be married, you have to own your own home, and that's not the case anymore. You can be single, you can be a same-sex couple and adopt, you can own a home, you can rent, you can live in an apartment. What the home study process just looks at the ability to care for a child. So, you know, you don't have to be rich, but you have to be financially taking care of yourself and your currently existing family.
And full disclosure, as an adoptive parent myself, that home study, that sounds really, really serious. So for anybody who's interested to it in the adoption process, what does that actually entail?
So if you've read your own home study, you know, it's just a story of your life. So
I'm not exactly sure what they wrote, but for some reason it worked. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yes. I mean, it's really, so if it's a two-parent household, we want to know, you know, how were you raised? How were you disciplined? I mean, and it doesn't have to be perfect. It's just, you know, telling the story of the adoptive family, what your household is like, the safety measures you're taking, how you, what training do you have in parenting techniques or experience? What's your schedule like? I mean, just all these things, so they can make sure that it's the right fit for a specific child. You know, talking about the community you live in, we'll go into the home study, financial, you know, how financially stable your home, you know, your family is, even though you don't have to be rich. What support you have, you know, if you need a break, who do you have to babysit your kids or, you know, give you a night off, you know, things down to that, because we know self-care for parents is really important. And, you know, the medical records of the family, anyone who's over 18 in the home needs to have a, you know, criminal clearance check and make sure that there's no abuse or neglect history within the home. And yeah, I'm trying to think about what else goes into the home study. A lot goes into it. And that's
I am really sure.
All I'm thinking but right now.
Approached with the goal of what's best for the child, number one. And then also balancing that with whatever aspirations a parent coming to the situation is, you know, trying to offer, number one, to the child, hopefully, and also to, you know, what your role is in the system to make sure that it's the right fit, I guess.
Right. Yes. There are a lot of support services for families who are interested in getting involved in foster care or adoption. Even with the adoption, there's a post-adoption resource centers that are in every county in the state of Michigan. So even after the adoption is done, when families need help, we're there for them to help connect them with resources. And there's financial help for families in a lot of cases as well.
So is Mayor and the Judson Center also involved with recruiting foster parents, or is that a separate part of the system?
Yeah, so Judson Center has a foster care department, and Judson Center desperately needs foster parents as well as every other foster care agency in Michigan, and especially foster parents who are willing to take older kids, like kids 10 and older. Families, sibling groups. So it's really important that we try to keep siblings together, because we, you know, a lot of times when kids come into care, that's all they have is their siblings. And so if it's safe, we want to keep the kids together. So we need families who can take more than one, you know, child out of, you know, if there's a sibling group.
Michelle Parra is joining us today, Program Manager of Michigan Adoption Resource Exchange. This is an important subject, and one that was deemed so important that we honored the cause in the month of November with National Adoption Awareness Month. And the Judson Center, the parent company, is doing just amazing things, as we're reading about and hearing about, to support this as well as other resources for children and families. And then MARE, Michigan Adoption Resource Exchange, doing its very specific role as it relates to the topic of adoption. The word exchange is sort of the giveaway, right? It's the hat tipping point there that represents what MARE does. And you've summarized it very appropriately, Michelle. When we get into sort of types of adoption with the traditional adoption, which people assume it's the baby, you know, you bring in the brand new baby into your home and you grow together as a family and so on. I would suspect, I couldn't say for sure, but that's probably not the way most adoptions take place. And then you have, of course, the older age adoptions. They're, you know, domestic adoptions, international adoptions, and so on. But what's the makeup like of our number 248 here in Michigan, just roughly speaking, in terms of ratios, percentages of rough age ranges, and so on? And why?
So the 248, I can break that down for you. So there's 23 kids of those 248 that are under 10. The rest of them are over 10. So the majority of them are older. And that doesn't mean that there is a reason other than their age that they're on our website. A lot of times when kids come into care, they, you know, younger ones may be adopted by foster parents or a relative. And then older ones may have been in care for a little bit longer and previous placements haven't worked out. So we have 156 youth that are 14 years old and older. And, you know, with these youth, we're trying really hard to find families for all youth, but especially these ones that are getting closer to 18, that we don't want them to turn 18 and not have a family, not have a family for when they're an adult, when they're learning, you know, the basic things about life, that we know that they need that support system. So we're trying hard. So even if you see a 17-year-old on our website, that 17-year-old still wants a family and still needs a family. So adoption looks, you know, looks very different when you're adopting a 15, 16, 17-year-old opposed to an infant. You aren't going to do the same things, obviously, but there's still such a great opportunity to make a difference in that life. And to be honest, these kids make really great differences in families' lives too, because we hear from, you know, families that adopt teenagers and like, they just bring so much energy and joy to the family. And it's not all you know, raising a teenager, I just know because I have two teenagers myself, like it's hard work. You know? It's hard work for anyone. So, but it's also so much fun. So we have this video that's on the Mayor YouTube page, and it's of youth talking about what they can do for families. Like they could drive you around, they can teach you TikTok dances. They'll go to, you know, watch the scary movies with you, things that, you know, just kind of trying to make it to be a fun thing, like to get people interested in thinking about how great it would be to adopt teenagers.
And just to make sure everyone knows, for more information about the organization we're talking about today, M-A-R-E, mare.org is their website where you can find out more information. And speaking of teenagers, especially some that may have been through, you know, several years of foster placement situations and things like that, is Mare involved with post-placement services, and what kind of, you know, social work support is available for children who may have had, you know, when you're talking about that 16 or 17 years old child, a number of years of unstable situations, I guess. Yeah.
So we have part of our, the MARE program, we call our match support program. And so we have social workers that go into the family's home when there's that transition. So if a youth is coming from another foster home, so let's say a family who inquires through our website is matched with a youth that's been on our website, we can put in a social worker that helps that transition. And what that transition could look like, you know, a child maybe moving from a different city, so getting ready for enrolling that youth in school, if there's a special education plan to kind of transferring that over, making sure that's set up before the youth moves into your home, finding a pediatrician, finding a therapist, finding, you know, maybe the family wants to do therapy together. So we assist the family in that. And if there's needs, you know, you don't know, especially when kids are in their adolescence, like you're going to learn things about them as they grow older. And we'll help train the families too on, you know, learning about attachment and trying to help, you know, make that secure attachment with the youth. You know, things like attention deficit disorder, or if, you know, if there's a child that has attention deficit disorder, we'll give the family resources on how do you care for a child? How do you advocate for your child when they have attention deficit disorder? So not just with that ADD, but with, you know, whatever functioning levels that the child is at, we help support the family in learning what's best. So it could be, you know, parenting techniques, could be chore charts. How do you get, you know, it could be whatever the families want. And we have really small caseloads with our match support program. So where adoption workers are really busy doing the legal aspect and paperwork, we're able to talk and be there with the family and give them some extra social work services. So that's a big benefit. And then once the adoption is finalized, Judson Center, it was not the MARE program, but Judson Center does have two contracts with the Post-Adoption Resource Center, which are also state contracts. And this is the program that every county in Michigan has some agency that's providing these post-adoption resource center services. And it could be case management, which is in the home, or just some information that the family needs, but they can reach out to their PARC program.
What we tend to see glamorized in the movies, you know, on the TV shows, it's kind of one extreme or the other. We see the stories that have the sweet, happy, wonderful ending where everybody lives happily ever after, and the family dynamic is perfect and gets even more perfect. And we know no family is perfect, but that's the one side. And then the other side is the, you know, it didn't work. It wasn't a good fit. There was a problem. It was, you know, those are the nasty ones that we don't want to look at necessarily. Those are those like weekly serial shows that are a little dramatic for the sake of being dramatic. But I suspect most every case is going to kind of fall somewhere in between.
Right. Yes.
There's probably no absolute one way that this whole thing plays out. But is there a common thread, you know, based on your experience, based on what you've seen, common scenario that you could walk us through that is pretty much the way it works?
Well, with the transition, I would say the common denominator of successful families are families that are able to adapt to the child that they're adopting, and realize that no child is perfect. So there are going to be things that come up, and that we just need to adapt to it and figure it out together and not give up on the child that they adopted or the child that they're in the process of adopting. There are going to be road bumps. So we never want to like sugarcoat it too much, because with parenting, how we were talking kind of before this, with parenting, it's never, you know, it's not a cookie cutter. There's not one recipe for parenting. You really need to do it based on the needs of your child. And kids in foster care, they may have a little extra needs because they've been removed from their biological family. There may have been some abuse or neglect. They need things that other kids may not need, and that is just extra support. And, you know, maybe one way to discipline a child, a biological child, it's going to be very different when you are disciplining a child or, you know, teaching a child something that is new into your home, and you have to learn kind of what works for them and what's not going to work. We don't ever want people to give up. And so we're here to support families when they are struggling with, whether it be behaviors or school issues that the child is going through. We're here to help the family tackle those with the youth.
So I know, obviously, heading at the end of National Adoption Month and heading towards the holidays, where, you know, for a lot of agencies, things might wind down a little bit. Are there any events coming up or some of these? I see, looking through the website, the mayor, a meet and greet and things like that. Are there any events coming up that that we can let our listeners know about?
Well, there have been a lot of events and a lot of adoptions through courts in November, which is exciting. Because the governor, you know, has designated November to be Adoption Month, and it's in the National Adoption Month. Our meet and greets are a great opportunity for families to kind of, well, you know, maybe your listeners to look forward to if they're interested in becoming adoptive parents. So once you're approved to adopt and you don't have a child yet in your home, you can attend one of our meet and greets. And that's where kids will come, families who have an adoption worker and are approved to adopt can come. And we do, I always describe it like a fun birthday party, even though it's not necessarily a birthday, but where we play games and we have food and break bread together, just get to know these kids, and the kids can get to know the families. And, The goal is always just to make it a fun afternoon, and usually they're on Saturdays, and we'll partner with community agencies to host these that will help us. So that's one event, but you do need to be approved to adopt. In September, we always have our Heart Gallery, so that we had this past September. We could look forward to that in the next September. But just keep an eye on our website, because even though we don't have any events on there now, we'll continue to post this time of year, and just November, once we get through November, and in January we'll start having, you know, more events that we'll post on there. There is a program going on right now in downtown Birmingham where stores are raising money for 20 youth who are in foster care, that once they turn 18, then the Great Decorate, which is the organization that's doing this, will financially help the youth once they turn 18. Because we know that when kids are in foster care, they may not, you know, have the financial support of kids who are not in foster care. So that's one thing that people can check out, is that the Great Decorate in downtown Birmingham.
So much information, so many things that we could talk about. We're running out of time, unfortunately, but
From the grown-up side of things, from the prospective parent thing, some people have been listening to this and want to explore it a little bit further. What is that first step? We know mare.org, M-A-R-E.org, but finding an agency, finding a state agency, what's the best way to approach it?
So if listener is interested in adopting through foster care, then you would want to adopt or to contact an adoption agency. And so all adoption agencies in Michigan are nonprofit agencies. So the state does foster care. You can go through the Department of Health and Human Services to become a foster parent, but the adoptions are done through private nonprofit agencies. So on our website, there's a list of agencies, but the easiest way is just to call us. Our number is 1-800-589-6273, or log on to our website and reach out to an adoption navigator. So both our website and that phone number will take you to the adoption navigators. So contacting, I mean, we will help you get started, but if you go, you know, don't contact us and you just want to find an adoption agency in your area, contact them and ask them to attend their adoption orientation. And they will probably have that on the agency's website as well. And all the adoption orientations are on the MAIR website. So attend the orientation, and it's a time to interview the agency, the adoption agency as well, to see, you know, ask them what types of families that they are looking for and that they need for the youth that are in their care.
Yeah, it's a calling. It's a special calling. But boy, every experience I've heard has been such a win-win.
Yeah. It's,
you know, you don't know who's benefiting more, and isn't that the way it should be? So
right.
We're very grateful, Michelle, for your work and that of your colleagues and your organization as well. And we only can hope and wish for some wonderful placements and some successful family building as we move forward at the end of this year and moving into next. So very grateful for your time today.
Well, thank you for helping us spread the word.
This is the WHFR Journal. Michelle Parra, thank you so much for being our guest today from the Judson Center and MAIR, the Michigan Adoption Resource Exchange, which is a program of the Judson Center. And for more information on them, it is simply MARE.org, MAIR.org. This is the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek, along with Susan McGraw. We will be back with more in just a moment. We do hope you will stay tuned.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey, hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Rollin' and Tumblin' is back on the air with vintage blues, R&B, the early days of rock and roll, the British Invasion. Mondays, 4 to 6 p.m., it's Rollin' and Tumblin', take two.
Welcome back. This is the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek, along with Susan McGraw, with you until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Kitty Love comes up at that time to take us on a trip down Highway 61. Some blues for your Friday afternoon here on WHFR Making Waves. Susan, obviously a station where we bring people a lot of different types of music, and certainly a big part of what we like to do and which we do over the course of the evening and other times during the course of the week is present classical music. And that's really where we're going to turn our focus for this next segment of the WHFR Journal.
So excited to welcome some of the representatives from the Michigan Philharmonic Orchestra and Michigan Philharmonic Youth Orchestra to our airwaves today. As you indicated, yeah, we have quite a variety, but we know people love our classical programming and some of the very diverse instrumental as well as vocal music that is being offered locally here in our own communities. And this is one, Michigan Philharmonic out of Plymouth, Michigan, and celebrating 77 years. That just is amazing that the organization has been here for so long. So we're very pleased to welcome Executive Director of the Michigan Philharmonic, Ms. Beth Stewart, as well as two representatives wearing the conductor hats or carrying the baton, Dennis Carter and Hector Kitekte. And they are going to be talking about the organization in general, as well as some very specific upcoming events, one taking place right around the corner next Tuesday. I often associate this time of season, special events, holidays, and all that kind of stuff. But to be able to enjoy this festivity of live music and then give it that youth twist, I think is just even more extra special. So, Beth, why don't we start with you and tell us a little bit about what's going on?
Sure. Well, thank you so much for having us on. We appreciate it. We appreciate the station very much and your focus on all kinds of music. And we love the classical emphasis because, of course, that's the world that we live in as the Michigan Philharmonic. We are a professional regional orchestra, so we're based in Plymouth. We like to say it's our world headquarters, but we do reach out and play throughout the Tri-County area. And our youth orchestra program in particular is very, very special to us because we believe that really working with the next generation, not only of musicians, but of audience goers and appreciators of classical music, is a very important role that we play as an organization. And so I believe that our youth orchestra program is in its 16th year now. And when I say regional, our youth orchestra program truly is a regional organization as we draw students from 13 different communities. So they come to us from all over the region to really get the chance to study, first of all, with the two great conductors that we have joining us today, who also happen to be play in the Michigan Philharmonic. So they're both principal players with us. So they have the opportunity to study with some really terrific people. And our music director and conductor, Nan Washburn, also is very involved in this program and actually was the founder of it with that same thing in mind, that music education is a really important part of what we do. And so this program has been growing over the years. And even during the pandemic, I'm very proud of what our group was able to do. And while the orchestra itself was sort of on a hiatus during that time with live performance, our youth orchestra program kept going through the whole pandemic time. And that's thanks to these two guys, too. They kept the students coming. They rehearsed outside in all kinds of conditions so that they could keep that going with people driving by and waving and honking and whatnot because they were right in the front yard of our office area here. And then when the weather got bad, they went online, which is not an easy thing to do, as we have seen and heard from everyone in the educational realm. But they went online, taught music theory, did lots of things with the students to help keep them engaged and practicing and participating and keeping music in their lives, which was such an important part for everybody, I think. I'm sure on the radio you noticed a great increase in people just listening and telling you how much music and the arts meant to them during the pandemic time. And now that we are back to being able to do live performance, we're so thrilled about that. And so the youth orchestra will be giving their live orchestra performance next Tuesday night, which is December 6th, starting at 7 o'clock. And it takes place in the Jack Wilcox Theater that is here in the Plymouth Arts and Recreation Complex in downtown Plymouth, where we also have our offices. And so I'm going to let Hector and Dennis share with you about the different ensembles that we have and really a little bit about the concert. But also, I think as musicians, they can speak to the role of what they do to really encourage young people to work hard, study hard, practice hard, and enjoy classical music.
Sure. Hi. I run the flute choir and the wind ensemble. And the wind ensemble is relatively new. And I came on like one semester. My first semester, I think, was the beginning of the pandemic. The second semester is when it hit. So like Beth was saying, it was just like a shock for us. We were like scrambling, like, okay, what do we do? What do we do? You know, and we're like, let's try online. And so I think we were the only ones to actually do concerts, but a lot of the youth organizations did go online out everywhere across the nation. But I think in Michigan, I think we were the only ones to actually physically do concerts. We're the only organization to do concerts, which was amazing because it was a huge challenge. Because as you know, you have to change up teaching in person versus virtually, you can't do them the same way. And that goes across the board with every subject. And so I think where a lot of folks failed was they tried to keep the same model as if you were in person. And we had it adjust big time, you know, to how we would, you know, because the audio, you can't have everyone play at the same time.
Yeah. So, having been doing Zoom interviews online for a couple of years, I've gotten very used to waiting that extra half a second before I jump in and say something. Yeah, please continue.
Exactly. With that, so the flute choir, you know, we have kids ranging from what, middle school age and through high school, and a few alumni who go on to community or university or conservatory. Some of them still actually come back and help us out, which is nice, because then the kids are like, oh, you played before, you know, you were my age when you started or whatever. So it's really encouraging for them to hear the folks that have gone through the program, and it encourages them to work a little bit harder, you know, and practice a little bit more, which, as we know, it's a chore to get the kids to look at their music, like, you know, the 7 days that till the next time, you know, we keep reminding them both, you know, Hector and I was like, if you don't look at what we fixed this week and you come back next week, guess what? You're still at the same point where you were last week. And so we have to, you know, but with that said, the kids are wonderful. They stuck with us through the rough time, and they sound wonderful. And I think, you know, our numbers have grown instead of depleted. They've grown tremendously. I know with the wind ensemble, when we started, I think it was when I started, it was like two people from the original. And then I recruited about 10 or 11 on top of that. So I think it was like 12 or 13 kids for my very first concert. And then the next semester it grew and grew. So now, I'm almost at 20, and we're, for the wind ensemble, we're doing like themes from The Nutcracker by Huckabee, and, I Wonder As I Wander by Niles, arranged by Michael Brown. And then we're doing this really tough piece called Patapan, based on the Burgundian Carol. By, I think it's Danish composer Bernard de la Manoia, arranged by Elliot Del Borgo. And it's super cool, and the kids are just eating it up. They're having a great time with the wind ensemble. And then my flute choir, I try to incorporate a little bit more of the Nutcracker. So I've got my flute choir doing a couple of the dance suites from that aren't included in the themes from the Nutcracker for the wind ensemble. So they're going to do Sugar Plum Fairy. And of course, you got to do Dance of the Reeds or Dance of the Merlitons. You got to do that. That's a big flute feature in the ballet. And then we're doing also, we're doing an African piece from Liberia, African Noel. So I think recruited two of our percussionists who do triple, quadruple duty, wherever we need them, right, Hector? They've been super cool. So we're doing African Noel and one other piece. Oh, O Come, O Come, Emmanuel. And so that's pretty much sums up the two groups that I work with, the flute choir and the wind ensemble.
Hey, Alan, don't you think it's pretty obvious how much fun Dennis has doing this kind of work? He took this leap of faith with two students and up to 20. And if you're having fun, it's contagious. It really is. And right, it certainly allows for more of an investment and a buy-in. And clearly, Dennis, you didn't get through two sentences without having a little giggle in there. And that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful thing because it speaks to your enthusiasm, you know, and your passion. And transcending that into the students' dynamic is the challenge, but it sounds like with the program growing, you're doing just that. So how fun is that? And I also have to say, Hector, sweet, sweet move pretending like your microphone wasn't on. So you made it.
I'm
talking, but I bet it's on now, isn't it?
I like that one.
Would you like to add anything, Hector, to what Dennis is talking with the?
Sure. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for having us to have this opportunity to talk through your wonderful radio station. We, as Beth mentioned, and Dennis, we have five different ensembles in our organization. The first two groups that I do conduct are strings player. And first group is about elementary school mostly. Younger kids, they never play before orchestra, never have experience. So I have to teach them from starting from how to stay on a chair as a player, how to hold violin as the player in an orchestra, and then after that technique and then musically and then everything else. And the second group also is only strings, and it's mostly middle school, more experienced kids. And then the highest group I conduct is the Youth Symphony, which is about high school people mostly, and it's about strings, brass, winds, and the percussion. I got this job starting with both groups, Strings and Sinfonia. I think it was 2008 when Nan called me for a meeting, and she offered me a job. But before that, she invited me to see the concert from the previous conductor. And then I was so down from the level that time. I'm sorry if I say that. Listen, guys, I always thought that to conduct the string group, it has to be a string player. Dennis is great. Dennis played viola. But you cannot play
tuba. I'm not a professional string player.
You cannot play tuba and conduct a string orchestra. There's no way, to my opinion. But anyway, I was happy when I offered this job. And then, to be honest, since the first year, you could see the difference of the both groups. Playing in tune first is so hard for little kids to stay in tune, right? And then, but listen, I always thought that the role model for our young students are the conductor. And then we have excellent player, Dennis Carter, mm-hmm. that teaching the flute choir and a wind ensemble. That's why the level is so high. And that's why he recruited so many kids, because of his name. Also, our organizations are very good name from Michigan Philharmonic Symphony Orchestra. In town. So the repertoire every year, I try to kind of combine classical, a little bit pops. Kids love Disney. And then for my middle group, they love Disney, especially Beauty and the Beast. So with my middle group, I'm going to do Beauty and the Beast, some selection from the music. It's lovely, lovely music. And for the first group, I have one of my favorites, and it's a friend of mine, the new composer named Soon-Hee Newbold. It's called Dragon Dances. It's such an amazing piece. And when I told her that I'm going to play that piece with our orchestra, she was very happy. But anyway, and then the highest group, Youth Symphony, that is the high school, is very, very challenged music. I'm going to do the Borodin Symphony number 2, in B minor, the fourth movement. Very, very challenged music. They're doing a great job. And then I'm going to do a couple number from Bizet, Ardesian Suite number 1 and number 2. Beautiful music. Also, this time of the year, by December, I do combine my middle group, which is the middle Sinfonia, with the highest group, Youth Symphony, one piece we call Side by Side. And then this year, I decided to do Christmas in Sarajevo. Ding-da-da-dum, ding-da-da-dum, ding-da-da-da. It's just a beautiful, enjoyable piece. I want to indicate the work that we did throughout the pandemic time. As both Dennis and Beth mentioned, as the winter time, we have to go online. What we did, since it doesn't work so well, right, to play all together online as, you know, in person, we did a lot of theory, something that the kids here are missing. Majority of the kids missing the theory. So I did at least a lot of the theory lesson throughout that time.
Is that something you wouldn't normally have time or opportunity to do in a face-to-face setting, where it's one thing to be sitting in front of a room of, you know, 20 or 30 young musicians and trying to keep them engaged, and doing more like, let's make some, I don't want to say make some noise, but let's make some noise versus getting into those, you know, theory kind of concepts. I'm just looking at this as a teacher myself. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, and you know, one of the things that we encourage all the students who play with us to play in their school orchestra or music program. And we also encourage them to take private lessons. A lot of them do. A lot of them don't, can't afford it, perhaps. And a lot of them miss out on theory. You know, as a teacher yourself, Alan, you'll know that when you have all these kids, teaching all of that stuff is hard when you get them for, you know, this very limited amount of time. So you count on them to be studying a lot of these things on their own, which they may or may not be doing. And so this really gave an opportunity, I think, to see where kids were and to fill in so much of the gaps that they have been missing in school or even with their own private teachers. And so even though it sounds deadly, you can't believe the kids came online and they did it. These guys tried ways to make it fun and did some games and various ways that, you know, you slip that music theory in there and still, you know, keep it fresh and helping them, you know, with their playing and their sight reading and everything else once they come back to you in person. And we have to give a shout out to one of our board members who lives in a fairly large house with a really, really, really big driveway, who let us do the concerts that these kids did in his driveway. And we allowed the parents to come, and they wore their masks and they sat separated out on the lawn and put these concerts on, because the whole idea behind this program is to give kids the opportunity to come together as an ensemble and play and perform. And one of the other highlights, I think, of our program, too, is that the middle string group and then the top Youth Symphony group both get the chance to play with the Michigan Philharmonic in a concert, in a side-by-side situation on opening of two different concerts, and share a stand with a professional musician. And it's a great opportunity for them, and one that I'm not sure anybody else is doing, except maybe Detroit Civic is doing that. But Dennis, for example, will tell you when he was a kid, he got a chance to do it. And yep, it leaves an impression that you don't forget, you know, that and you're like, wow, this is what it's like, you know. And when those
kids, I'm sure you nailed it, Dennis. You absolutely nailed it, right? Yeah,
I'm sure he did. And our kids do, too. If you listen to a recording, you know, you cannot tell that there are young kids playing on this concert, and they're playing out. And, you know, you just, when you watch them sitting next to the pros, you know, their bow is bigger, their sound is bigger, their confidence is enhanced. And, it's really, I think, just a super great opportunity. And, I always get a little emotional when these kids play, because I feel like they're a parent or something. And, you know, just watching them on Tuesday nights and all the crazy hormones and everything that are going on with all these kids all the time. You know, and then when you see them and they all come together and they sound so great, I'm just like, oh, it's so good. So I love those concerts when we get the chance to do that.
So this one coming up this Tuesday at the Michigan Philharmonic Youth Orchestra presentation of this very special winter concert. And we heard the pieces that are going to be presented and so on. And this one's taking place in Plymouth Park. It's a pretty good sized venue. What about the some moving forward if people are not able to acquire a ticket or participate in this next one? Additional opportunities? And also, how can our listeners get on your mailing list or your email list?
Oh, yeah.
They don't miss anything.
Well, They can. Anybody can go to MichiganPhil.org, and that annoying screen pops up right away and says, do you want to be on our mailing list? So you can join at that time, anytime. And then also go to MPYO.org, which is our youth orchestra site, and all the information is there about how people could join the youth orchestra if they're interested. We will be doing, I believe, right, guys, auditions again or something for second semester.
Yeah, and we need. Yeah, thank you.
Do we have a date for that?
No, I think. We'll be on the website. Yeah, I think contact Mrs. Davidson, and because we've both been doing like calling our friends, our colleagues, and stuff, and trying to recruit because we definitely need more brass, more winds, percussion. You know, of course, more strings, but we definitely need more brass, winds, and percussionists. And there's plenty of room. So, and a great opportunity because a lot of schools, you know, they're only pulled in close to the concert time. The winds and brass are pulled in with the strings at their prospective high schools. And this way they get an opportunity to play for a whole year with orchestra or with, you know, wind ensemble, you know, together. So it's a great opportunity to have another place, have another outlet to meet some other folks that are doing the same thing that they are, you know. So very special to play in the youth orchestra. It's a very special time.
We have two round of auditions. One is by May. And for the people that cannot do that round, we have another round by end of August. So to give opportunity to the kids that, you know, to audition again for us.
Yeah, those are formal dates.
Yeah. And then again for second semester. So we're really only limited by the size of our stage, which we just keep adding on to.
Because tell us about the facility. You mentioned your offices and the theater where this is going to be taking place, the concert the other day, which obviously is in Plymouth. Tell us a bit about the facility.
Well, the Plymouth Arts and Recreation Complex is in downtown Plymouth, and it used to be originally Plymouth High School. It was built in 1917, and then it became Central Middle School, and both my kids went here. I'm sitting here in the principal's office, so that's where our offices are.
That's why I was so nervous as we were conducting this interview. I'm in the principal's office again.
Deja vu there, Alan?
Believe me, I know it well. Yeah.
So we're actually in the old main office of the building. We were the first group to move in here once it became an arts and recreation complex. It's now three floors full of all kinds of arts, recreation activities, music lessons. They have everything in this building from fencing to pottery to the Friends of the Rouge environmental group is in here. It's a very cool location. So lots of synergy in this building. And they last year were able to convert what used to be the old cafetorium into a real auditorium with thanks to a man who had passed away a number of years ago in Plymouth and left money, Jack Wilcox, to support arts in our community. And they gave $1 million grant so that they could convert this into a really nice, almost 300 seat auditorium. So it fills up pretty fast with the parents and everybody of all these kids because, well, we have about 110 kids in the youth orchestra this year. So when Hector puts those two groups together at the end to play, it's a lot of kids. And but like I said, we make room for everyone. And I also just want to mention that while there is tuition associated with this, we do not ever turn anybody away who does not have the ability to pay. We have several people who help support scholarships for our program. And then we also have a number of our service organizations in the community that support scholarships for that too. So it's available to everyone. And as long as you can play a scale, right? You guys teach them everything else.
But no pressure there. No pressure.
No pressure.
What sounds great. That's Stuart, Executive Director of the Michigan Philharmonic Orchestra. And then we have Dennis Carter and Hector Kitekte joining us as conductors and very much involved in moving this wonderful organization forward and all the different facets that are involved. Would you give Beth one more time the contact information for those that want to learn more about this organization and about upcoming performances?
Sure. You can find everything about the Michigan Philharmonic on our website at michiganphil.org. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, at TikTok, all those crazy things. And for the youth orchestra, you can go to MPYO, which is Michigan Philharmonic Youth Orchestra.org, and find out any information about the orchestra that way too. Or Beth at Michigan Phil, anybody can send me an email and I'm happy to talk with people. So we encourage people to come out. Our Michigan Phil holiday concert will be on Thursday, December 8th. At First United Methodist Church in Plymouth. We had a little change of venue, but it's working out for us, and we can add lots more people. Our concert was previously sold out, but we've moved it to another venue where we can get lots more people in. So we invite everybody to come and join us. And thank all of you for helping to support great music in our communities. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Beth Stewart is the executive director of the Michigan Philharmonic. MichiganPhil.org is the website there. Concert coming up on Tuesday evening. We thank her and Dennis Carter as well as Hector Kitekte for being with us on today's WHFR Journal. And last but not least, Susan McGraw for being with me today on our program. We hope everybody has a great weekend. We are out of time. This is WHFR Dearborn. Kitty Love up next. Some blues for your Friday afternoon on Highway 61 coming up next.
Listener supported non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
Time. That's where my baby.